weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under the radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth, and happy 2024, everyone. We are starting off the year with some old drama that is coming to a head. The fighting in the Michigan Republican Party is really starting to boil over. On Saturday, opponents of party chair Christina Caramo plan to meet to vote on ousting the chair. Here with me to break it all down is Bridge, Michigan political reporter Jonathan Osting. Jonathan, welcome back to Mishmash.
Hey, Shayna. Thanks for having me.
So let's start just with the vote itself. Who is calling for it and how likely are they to successfully get rid of Caramo? And there's like a year's worth of brewing tensions here that we'll get into in a minute. So just for now, like, who are the people that are trying to get rid of her?
Sure. Well, the meeting was technically called for by a state committee member named Bree Mogenberg. She's from the Mount Pleasant area. She is very much a grassroots Republican, sort of rose up out of the Moms for Liberty movement, actually. She made the call, but there's a whole group of folks who have been, a growing group of folks, really, who have been working to try and get to this point and muster up enough support to oust Caramo. You need technically 75% of the state committee. It's about 100 people, but they only need 50 to call the meeting, and they only need and then they could possibly change the bylaws in the meeting to lower the threshold to remove Caramo. So I think the fact that they've called this now suggests that they are pretty confident they have the votes to oust her. What's not clear is, well, what's also very clear is that Christina Caramo is not going to recognize this vote. She is already very publicly calling this an illegal meeting, arguing that it wasn't called according to party bylaws. Even if they vote her out, I think this isn't going to be the end of the story. I think this could end up in court, quite frankly, and we could see a legal battle over who actually controls the state party moving forward.
Yeah, and that kind of speaks to my next question, which is, you know, what does happen after this vote? I mean, supporters of Caramo and Caramo herself are saying that you can't do this. This vote is being called improperly. I mean, aside from the potential legal battles that we could probably expect, I mean, are we looking at possibly like a full split within the party?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's quite possible. I think there already is a full split within the party, right? We saw a couple weeks ago, Caramo called a state committee meeting and at the last minute decided to change that to a remote, so like a Zoom meeting. And her critics then organized their own in-person meeting, and they actually had more members of the state committee present at this alternate meeting than the one Caramo tried to call herself. So literally, we've seen a split in the party happen before, and I think we'll see it again.
Take us back. What started all of this? I mean, did Caramo get this chair position with a pretty decent majority, or has there always been issues with her taking over this spot?
Well, so she really came out of the grassroots movement. I mean, like a lot of folks who now are, key members of the Michigan Republican Party got energized by the 2020 election, believes disproven claims that the election was rigged against former President Donald Trump. And those folks, she had a lot of support. I mean, she won at convention in February. It was a multi-candidate race, and it did take her until the third election, they do runoffs, to finally win. She got about, I think it was 56% of the vote against Matt DiPerno, who was another prominent election denier. So in either case, you are going to see an outsider come in and take over the party. And outsiders who very much are focused on this, election conspiracy theories. Fast forward several months, Caramo had promised to, big donors were leaving the party. They didn't like either Caramo or DiPerno, but especially Caramo. She said some very, antagonistic things about rhinos and the Uniparty. A lot of this jargon we hear from far right or Trump purists, I guess you could say, the MAGA movement. And so she, vowed she was going to woo small dollar donors. She was going to get small businesses across the state to kick in $500 instead of, one big donor kicking in $5 million. But, over the course of several months, it became clear that the party was not raising funds. She, in fact, had to take out a loan to pay one of the speakers at the Mackinac Republican Leadership Conference in September. And one of the people that helped organize that conference, Warren Carpenter, he basically at that point, broke from Karamo. He was working with her, but then saw how that conference was organized. And basically, he argues he saw a lot of incompetence, possibly even, he says, illegal, machinations with campaign finance monies. And he then started really agitating and quit the party, but started organizing from the outside to try and round up support for this ouster effort. And several months later, it looks like he's, on the cusp of actually having a successful vote.
So what happens if Karamo is ousted? Is there anybody in line to take over? Are we looking at possibly seeing two separate GOP, how does all of the internal workings go here when it comes to leadership?
Yeah, so if she is ousted and it's recognized by a court or what have you, the co-chair of the party would take over temporarily. That's Melinda Pego. She's a woman from Muskegon who ran with Karamo but has since broken with her. She too joined calls for, she signed a petition to hold this ouster vote a couple weeks ago. So she would take over the party temporarily, and then the state committee, and again, that's about 100 really diehard Republicans who not only ran as precinct delegates, but then were elected by their fellow Republicans to serve on the state committee. That group of roughly 100 Republicans would then meet again to appoint a new chair to finish out Karamo's term, which runs through the end of this year. There are no real public candidates at this point. You may have heard a great piece on NPR, This American Life, had some audio of at one point, former candidate and GOP consultant Scott Greenlee was talking to these Karamo opponents about possibly stepping in, but he has since taken on some new jobs working on campaigns, including Peter Meyer's U.S. House campaign, and says he's not interested. He is putting forth the name of Pete Hoekstra, the former congressman and ambassador to the Netherlands under Trump. But Hoekstra, too, is not publicly saying he's interested in the post. And, we'll see. I mean, I think there could be a real battle among the grassroots over who would fill this position moving forward. So the drama could continue even after a court ruling.
This does seem like something we're going to be talking about for quite a while. Does it seem like there's any desire within the party to sort of tamp down that far right Trumpism that has really been boiling up within the party? Is there anybody who's actually maybe we want the leadership to be more old school Republican, more middle of the road Republican, or are they still really feeling that far right fever?
Well, there are certainly outsiders who voice those opinions or former party officials. But I mean, for the most part, the people who are in the state committee now are people that, firmly believe the 2020 election was rigged, for instance. And so, we saw even, like I said, at her convention where Karamo won, the alternative choice was not Scott Greenlee, who ran as sort of the more establishment candidate. It was Matt DiPerno, a fellow election denier who is now battling legal charges, actually, for a tabulator tampering scheme after the 2020 election. So, I think there are a lot of traditional Republicans who would like to see sort of a return to normalcy in the party. But, with the current makeup of the state committee, that doesn't seem entirely likely.
How has Karamo been reacting to all of this? Has she given any statements, or has she been sort of keeping quiet until Saturday?
She's done mostly, conservative media. She hasn't, I'll say she hasn't been responding to my requests for comment. But she has done some, conservative podcast type things, and in fact was on a Fox 2 program in Detroit on Thursday night, where she, pretty vehemently defended herself. She, again, as we've said, argued, that this meeting was not legally called, and so she won't recognize it. But, she also says that she was elected to be a disruptor, to be a change agent, to bring a new perspective to the party. And she acknowledges there have been some bumps along the way. I think that's how she put it. But she said it was sort of inevitable that she would face pushback given her new approach to party matters. So fairly defiant, says she won't resign. I will note a aide of the party's 13 congressional district chairs a couple weeks ago asked her to resign, so this removal vote wouldn't even have to come to a head. But she is pretty defiant, saying she won't do that.
I want to check in on a big story that you've been following involving former Speaker of the State House, Lee Chatfield. Chatfield is being investigated by Attorney General Dana Nessel for possible misappropriation of political funds. Give us a little bit of an update on this case and sort of what's going on there.
Yeah, so Nessel had originally told myself and several other reporters that she hoped to make a charging decision in the case by the end of the year. She didn't do that for Chatfield. She said basically that investigation continues. It is a financial investigation, but also a sexual assault investigation. This investigation actually began in late 2021 when Chatfield's former sister-in-law, now former, she was his sister-in-law at the time, alleged that he sexually assaulted her beginning when she was a teenager at the and a student at the Christian high school where he taught. But she also alleged financial improprieties that really sort of, launched a whole different sort of investigation that is still ongoing. But as part of that, Nessel, late December, charged some top aides to Chatfield who had worked in the legislature for him, but also ran a lot of his political funds, both his campaign accounts and nonprofits associated with his leadership. And these people, Ann and Rob Menard, have been charged with a real a wide bevy of crimes. Actually, I think more than 10 felonies each, largely revolving around embezzlement and misuse of those political funds. It's alleged close to $500,000 they misappropriated for their own personal use. That particular charging decision did not directly implicate Chatfield. Again, the attorney general said that investigation into the former speaker himself continues.
So we still don't know at this point the extent of Chatfield's involvement, and he still has not been charged with anything. Do we know if Nessel is going to be making a decision on that anytime soon, given that she's already past the end of the year self-imposed deadline?
She said she hopes to. I mean, she suggested in the next couple months, possibly, at her December press conference where she announced the charges against the Menards. It's also worth noting that it's a common tactic for prosecutors to charge underlings and hope that they perhaps roll over or testify against their bosses. So that could be part of the strategy here, that she's hoping the Menards to offer some sort of testimony regarding Chatfield that might bolster whatever investigation they're working on. I will note Chatfield, through his attorney, has denied any criminal wrongdoing or financial, sexual assault or financial impropriety. He's acknowledged he had an affair with his sister-in-law, but says they were consenting adults at the time.
Finally, this is our first episode of 2024, and it's going to be a major year politically, given there's a Michigan U.S. Senate seat up for grabs with Senator Debbie Stabenow not running. There's also a presidential election. Democrats in Michigan are going to try to hold on to their majorities in the House and Senate. So, Jonathan, what are some things that you're going to be watching for this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think the campaign, campaigns are going to be very interesting. As you mentioned, the Senate seat is going to be one of the most competitive in the country, I think. There's a couple U.S. House seats. Dan Kildee not running for re-election, particularly, and then because Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin is running for the Senate seat, her district is going to be very competitive. That's here in the Lansing area. And of course, we've talked about the Michigan GOP drama. They are this year, there is going to be a presidential primary, but the GOP is actually also holding a convention where there will be a series of congressional district caucuses. And actually, a majority of the party's delegates to the national convention, where they actually select the presidential nominee, are going to be decided at this caucus. Which, given some of the drama in the Michigan GOP right now, suggests that could be very interesting. But as far as the legislature and the governor, the governor announced she'll be doing her State of the State speech January 24. But I think it's going to be a little slower in Lansing this year. Democrats last year were their first, trifecta, as they call it, in 40 years, did a whole lot. But at the end of the year, they lost their voting majority in the state house because two members won mayoral elections and so resigned from the state house. Those seats won't be filled until April, late April. So the first few months of the year, I don't think you're going to see a ton of big legislation, at least not overtly partisan or, partisan divide legislation, anyways, move through the legislature. Anything that does get done, Democrats are going to need at least some Republican support for, which is a new dynamic.
I also wanted to ask you, what is going on with former U.S. Congressman from Michigan, Fred Upton, and the unity ticket, speaking of elections coming up?
Yeah, so Upton is part of a group called No Labels, which is trying to get on the ballot or at least get a candidate who can get on the ballot in all 50 states. As you said, a unity ticket. They're looking for a ticket that would have a Republican and a Democrat on it because Upton and some other folks in this group feel that, neither Biden or Trump, who appear to be the likely nominees for their respective parties, are all that appealing to voters right now. So they want to offer a third option and one that is less partisan. Upton personally says he wants a Republican to lead that ticket with a Democratic running mate because he doesn't want Trump to win. And he thinks that would be a greater threat to Trump. That said, a lot of Democrats are really bashing this group because they think any third party run is actually likely to help Trump. There's a lot of debate over what the implications of this might be. As of now, though, it's more of a theoretical issue because this group does not actually have candidates. They don't have a presidential candidate or a vice presidential candidate willing to run on this ticket at this point. They're going to announce that, they hope, in the spring.
Jonathan Oesting, political reporter for Bridge Michigan. It is always a pleasure to have your expertise here on Mishmash.
Yeah, thanks again.
Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station. This episode was produced by myself, Shayna Roth, and the incredible Hearns Laguerre Jr. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. Our digital team is Dave Kim, Sophia Joswiak, Jack Philbrandt, and Jenny Sherman. As always, if you listen to this show and you want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review, or if you really, really like this podcast, and we really hope you do, you can support WDET. Just go to WDET.org/give. Without your generous contributions and support, shows like Mishmash and all the other great work done by WDET would not be possible. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.